This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
And welcome to another episode of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and finally joined with me today are both my co-hosts, Lee Hutchison and Richard Marquez. Lee and Richard, I don't want to get too sappy, but I seriously have missed podcasting with you. I'm so glad we are all three together. It's been too long. I know we all have busy lives, but I just wanted to say hello, welcome back. I'm glad we are all here.
Yeah, I'm glad. And like yesterday, I was making up the schedule for the next few months for our episodes, and I was so glad to see so many episodes. I was like, we're all going to be back together uninterrupted for a good few months. Like, it's just been a crazy month. Like, yeah, like I had a couple Sundays in a row where I was like running marathons, and like the idea of going home and doing anything other than having a long bath, it seemed too much. So I've had to make do with listening to you guys from the listener's point of view. So you guys, Justin, Patrick, you've all been brilliant to listen to as a listener. So I'm glad to be back in on the other side.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty good break too, because I certainly needed it. But yeah, it was good to be off. But at the same time, yeah, I kind of missed it. I was sad, but I wore my Trek FM shirt during my family's barbecue, so we're good.
Yes, I saw that posted. That was great to see representing. Yes, yeah, it's gonna be hit and miss with me because now school is out for the summer. Woohoo! And so I'll be taking a few trips here and there. So, but we are very excited. All three of us are going to be doing our unsung episodes for season 4. Now, if you remember, we decided to celebrate Next Gen, their 30th anniversary, by highlighting some episodes that don't get as much love as we feel they should. So we each have come up with a list of 3 episodes for season 4. And we've all agreed that the loved ones are best of both worlds, family, redemption. So we're not going to include those fan favorites. But we do have a list of 3 episodes and 2 honorable mentions, just in case there are some duplicates, which has happened in the past. You guys have stolen a couple of mine, if I do recall.
It's quite a bold accusation to make there, Amy. Yeah. You'll be finding you'll be podcasting alone again after this. It'll just be me and Richard. You'll be you'll just have to make do with being in the Babel conference instead.
Well, I do believe that it's on the record, if the listeners will remember, and go back a couple episodes. So I'm very excited, and I found that season 4 was actually a little bit difficult to find an episode that fans don't really like, because season 4, every single episode, I was like, oh my, all the fans love this. So I'm excited to hear your lists and to see why you included them. And so, Richard, why don't you start us off with your season 4?
Okay. So I was also having the same problem, because, and you know, the way I was thinking about this whole list was, what would Lee pick? What would Amy pick? So, of course, I steered away from the Troy stories. And
I did that every time I watched The Next Generation anyway.
Lee, you're so bad.
But so I chose In Theory. Failed attempt at Data going into a love romance. And you know how difficult it is for him to. I mean, obviously, you can't create a program to predict the unpredictability of a relationship, especially when you're reading another partner's. I mean, you know, some of it's intuition, and you know, some of it's also, you know, yeah. It is your protocol. Like, you know, if your girlfriend says, you know, go back to your baby, you don't. And I'm like, it reminds me so much of my past relationships and even Jennifer sometimes of like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. I probably should have sat there and listened to her and whatnot. But yeah, it's a great episode. I love it. I love how you can definitely tell Brent Spiner's acting ability when he's like saying, would you like another drink, dear? Would you like to do this, dear? And I just couldn't stop laughing when I saw that part. It's just like, it's great. His range of acting is fantastic, and it can change on a dime, apparently. And then, of course, you have the B story where they get stuck in a strange anatomy, but yeah, whatever.
That always happens.
Yeah.
That's an episode I've not watched in quite a long time. It seems to kind of sandwich between kind of quite a few good episodes. It kind of goes from Mind's Eye, then that into Redemption, and it's always one I probably just skip to just get that further ahead in the story. So I think I'm due a bit of a rewatch on it.
Yeah, I like it too, and I always remember the scene at the end is just so heartbreaking, and you're right, Brent Spiner pulls it off being the android that he is, with no emotions of, okay, well, I don't need this program anymore, I'm just going to delete it, and you're just like, oh my gosh. I don't know. Maybe there have been some relationships where I wish I could just delete that whole file and not even think about it again.
Was that with an Irish landlord, was it?
Well, you know, and I like that. You know, I wish we could all do. But then again, you know, you wouldn't learn or grow from that experience either. So that's probably the only thing I didn't like about it, was that I really wish they would have said, you know, like, I would keep it and it'll grow, and maybe we'll see something later on down the road. Maybe, I mean, or not, it doesn't really matter, but you know, it's, you know, I mean, learn from the experience and yeah, grow from it, I guess. It doesn't have to be deleted.
Yeah, we definitely don't have that opportunity. So we learn from it or just repeat the mistakes, right?
Right, exactly.
That is great. Yes, listeners, go watch In Theory. That is a very good pick. All right, Lee, give us one from your list.
Yeah, I've gone for Final Mission. On his way to Starfleet Academy, Wesley Crusher must care for an injured Captain Picard after the shuttle crashes on a deserted moon. The reason I've picked this is with all my kind of picks, I always try and pick something where it just stands out for maybe a different reason or something a bit obtuse. And I think this one kind of stands out kind of in all the 700 plus episodes of Star Trek, is apart from Jadzia Dax and Kes, we've not had a character to date that's left the series. Well, kind of Tasha Yar, obviously, but kind of it's very rare that we get these episodes where a character leaves the show and they come off from the opening credits. I mean, some people could say that about Pulaski, but she wasn't in the opening credits. But Wesley Crusher, this is always kind of a rare thing when it happens in Star Trek. You know, the fact it's only happened 5 times and this is its second time. So it's always good to see how Star Trek goes with writing out characters out of the series, and sometimes it goes well, maybe, but most of the time they don't seem to kind of pack too much of a punch there. I kind of think of Tasha Yar's death, and I quite like it for the kind of savageness and the randomness of it. And then you've got, say, Jadzia Dax's death, which is quite kind of a bit overly dramatic with that they're going to have this kid and then 30 minutes later she dies. And then kind of Kes, I think that's a really good exit. And various things like that. So with Final Mission, it's one of a few kind of episodes where someone's leaving. So it's kind of interesting to view it like that. And I think it's a fine episode. And I think Wesley, by this stage of the series, wasn't really contributing much to the story. That I think during his sort of younger days, kind of season one, season two and three, he was contributing to kind of the escapades or the problem solving. But it seemed to be that when he got that red uniform and got behind Khan, that there was very little things for him to do. And I could see why someone like Will Wheaton would say, kind of, enough's enough. I want to get out there and contribute to movies and other TV shows. So yeah, Final Mission's a rare episode of Star Trek. You know, it's rarer than, you know, episodes about nebulas and whatever, that we've got someone that's leaving mid-series. And is that a success? Is it not? I mean, he does come back in various episodes, but he's still being written off. And it's an interesting way that he goes. He goes off to Starfleet Academy, which makes sense. And he has this mission where he saves Picard again. It kind of has a nice parallel between this and, I can't remember the name of the episode off the top of my head, where it's got the pack lids. So it's a nice little mirror there where they're kind of both together again. And I would love if Picard was kind of played up maybe more of the surrogate role dad with Wesley. But that's a minor complaint, really. So yeah, I think it's an overlooked episode.
So one thing I love about this episode is Wesley leaves the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, goodness gracious.
No, I'm not a big fan of Wesley, but I mean, to be fair on this episode, it actually was really was a pretty good episode. You know, it to me, when they made the change from him going to gray to red, it seemed awkward to me. I don't know, because maybe I'm not used to him in red. But like it just seemed awkward because, you know, he's not in a sense part. I mean, he is part of the crew, but he's not, you know, sort of thing officially by Starfleet. But whatever. It doesn't matter. But yeah, it was a really good send off episode. I really do enjoy this episode quite a bit. It definitely shows how much he's matured since the beginning. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah,
we were just talking, did the June roundtable, and talking about how Pulaski never really had that send off, you know, and really she should have. I mean, she was a great character that was on for a season, and, you know, she definitely could have had a better send off and, you know, sort of continued her story in our mind instead of, oh, here's Beverly Crusher, no mention of Pulaski again. So this is, I think, rare for TNG. He's going off to Starfleet. And so in our mind, he's just there and his story continues, you know, while we watch the Enterprise D continue. Yeah. So, well, and Picard expects Wesley, you know, because they crash land. And so they have to find cover from the harsh weather and sun and stuff. And so then they go into these caves and you can really see Picard putting a lot of expectations on Wesley and needing him to step up. And I like that relationship. I think you mentioned, you know, that surrogate father type of thing, but also a commanding officer. And I think he really teaches Wesley a lot of characteristics of what makes a leader. And so this, for that, I like this episode a lot. So my first one, and don't laugh, but this one, I don't think.
Wait. It's a Troy story?
Well, yes, it happens to be.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Doug.
But I don't think this one gets any love, and that is Night Terrors. And if you forgot this is the one where the Enterprise meets up with the, they get stuck in the Tychon's Rift and the USS Britain. Britain. And there is one survivor on the ship and happens to be Betazoid, like Troy. And so she gets in his mind. And then we have the amazing quote, eyes in the dark, one moon circles. That's so funny. I don't like that part of it. But what I do like about it is it's a fun little mystery, right? They're trying to get the USS Bertain back together and get it operational, and they try all these things and it doesn't work. And then the crew starts acting out, and then Crusher realizes that everyone's not getting their sleep, their REM sleep. And I just think how irritable I know I get when I don't get any sleep. And I notice my patience with my students is much less than it should be. And it's like, oh, I need to get some sleep. And so for me, it's just pretty relatable in that aspect of it. But I like the fun mystery of it. And of course, Troy's part, and she realizes that they need to send in oxygen, and another example of Data saving the day, and he gets command of the ship because everyone's losing their mind. And so it's another good Data and Troy story. So what do you guys think about Night Terrors?
I really like it quite a lot. I think it's such a moody episode, and it's kind of got that kind of, you're used to kind of the Next Generation being such a brightly lit show, and with this it's got really quite moody, and it's kind of got that, it plays on some of the horror tropes. And yeah, it's easy to mock Troy kind of swimming through the nebula, as it were, but I think it looks really quite good, and it's definitely an episode of Star Trek that I think kind of stands out. And yeah, I really like it. I've never had any problems whatsoever with this. It's a hidden gem. I definitely agree.
So I haven't seen this episode in a very long time, and I remember the reason why. I just remembered it. So the Bertain morgue, where the bodies all stand up.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that when I first time ever watching, that freaked me out. But like, yeah, it's a really good episode. I really enjoyed this episode. It just reminded me of that, because I was like scrolling through it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the one where the bodies start setting up, and
Yeah, you're right, Lee. It is that moody, and yeah, and like you're saying, those bodies pop up. I mean, that's some horror going on right there.
Yeah.
So I did refreshing my memory and doing a little bit of research, I did notice, or I did see, that the USS Bertain is the same model as the USS Reliant in The Wrath of Khan. Thought I would bring that up for so that people don't think that I know nothing about TOS. It's my facade. Is it working?
Yeah, you've got me. It's only if Zach and Ken can buy into your charade.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. All right. So, Richard, give us another one on your list.
I did an episode review for this when we were doing From There to Here, and it is The Wounded.
Oh.
Love this episode. I mean, I don't hear anyone really talk about this episode, because it's kind of, I mean, it gives a great background story to the conflict between the Cardassians and the Federation. And yeah, I guess I don't really think they talk about Bajor really, but they talk about the conflict, but really that's about it. But like, one of the things I really love about this episode is that it's, you know, you talk about like being on the front lines, and the politics, even within the front lines, it's very dynamic, and you definitely you're in the wilderness. I mean, you got to rely on your own instincts. And was it the Phoenix?
Yeah.
Is that the, I'm sorry. How the Phoenix responds to what they see is, to me, is just, I mean, it was like, yeah, I'd probably freak out and probably start destroying ships if I knew that they were doing something, you know, shady or something like that, and no one was listening to me, you know, higher up or anything like that. So, but yeah, I love this episode. It's great. And it's too bad we don't get to see a Nebula class starship in combat, but that'd be great. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I also love this episode. It was on my honorable mentions list. Justin Ozer will be after you, though, because they don't mention Bajor in this episode. It doesn't get mentioned until Ensign Ro in the following season. So, yeah, be careful.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, didn't we talked about this, because this is the one with Captain Maxwell, right?
This was more the introduction of the Cardassians than anything else.
Yeah, so we talked about this when we did our lead in to Deep Space Nine, right? We covered, talked about it, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, this definitely gets into those messages of, you know, revenge and hating one's enemy and can you ever forgive and, you know, the purposes behind it. Definitely a very, very good episode. I like it. Yeah. Awesome. All right, Lee, you're up.
I've gone for an episode I love of the season four, and I think it's probably in the top 10 of the Next Generation season, but I picked it for a different reason, is The Mind's Eye. And The Mind's Eye marks the directing debut of who at this point was just a kind of associate producer on the show, David Livingston. And he would go on to be the biggest producer of directing content on Star Trek, period. He only did like a couple episodes on The Next Generation and then did about 17 for Deep Space Nine, over 20 for Voyager, and about 10 or so for Enterprise. And with kind of, you look at kind of his kind of catalogue of episodes, you know, Dr. Bashir, I presume, You're Cordially Invited, The Maquis, The Die Is Cast, Deadlock, Future's End, Killing Game, Equinox, which I'm sure Richard has just been triggered off there, Power Play, The Visitor. He's directed some of the best episodes of Star Trek, period. And this was his kind of first entryway into it. And you look at this episode and it's got such a cinematic kind of experience to watching it. Like, everything feels big, you know, from the Romulan warbird appearing in the little screen and to the kind of the assassination attempt and, you know, the echoes of the Manchurian Candidate. There's just so much awesome stuff going on in this episode, and David Livingston, you know, takes what is a really good script and really, you know, sells it as this big cinematic episode that, and a key episode in this Romulan Civil War, this Klingon Civil War arc that's really starting to kick off now.
Yeah, I got nothing. He said everything I wanted to say.
So this is the one where Geordi gets taken?
Right. Yeah. Geordi gets taken hostage by the Klingons and gets essentially set up to be the kind of the Manchurian Candidate. He's going to assassinate this minor Klingon ambassador that could, you know, and doing this could kickstart kind of a war. So the Romulans are fairly being duplicitous in the background. So yeah, it's a classic as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, I would like to share with you my second choice. And oh my gosh, it happens to be another Troy episode. Imagine that.
Oh, shocking.
No, but I like this also because there's some math in there that I wanted to highlight. So if you can guess, it is The Loss. And this is the one where the Enterprise D is caught up in a group of two-dimensional life forms. And because of that, Troy loses her empathic powers. And so I like this episode for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's very memorable to me because when they're in the conference room and they're like finally figured out that they're trapped in this two-dimensional space and they have the diagram there, it is so awesome. And it just like, it clicks in my math brain. Like, you know, you've got length and width, but there's no height. And here we are. So you don't see the Enterprise. It is an actual, just a oval, or depending on what part of the saucer you're in, you know, a circle, oval, whatever. And it's being, this Enterprise D is being taken along for this ride, and they're trying to figure out how to do it. Have you guys seen the movie Flatland with Martin Sheen and Kristen Bell? It's an animated film. Okay. You guys really need to see Flatland. It's a great math movie, but also it's got some social commentary on like different classes and socioeconomic status. But anyways, it talks about how like if the people, and again, it's animated, the people are geometric shapes. So you have your circles, your squares, and your triangles, and they each represent a different socioeconomic, you know, SES is what we call it in education. And so it's based off of a book written by Edwin A. Abbott from 1884, an 1884 novel. And so these shapes, two-dimensional shapes, they come across this three-dimensional sphere. But when the sphere interacts with it, you only see the circle, because they have no way of seeing this. And I love that movie because then it's like, well, we are three-dimensional beings. What do we see if we encounter a fourth-dimensional being? I love thinking about that. So what I like about The Loss is that here we have three-dimensional beings, the Enterprise D and everyone in it. And then it's going down a dimension to this two-dimensional life forms. And I like that parallelism of, you know, talking about instinct versus reasoning, and how like reasoning would be our third dimension, like how we live and how we think. But then to go down to a two-dimensional being, like what are they doing? They recognize that it's instinct, and how we all have instinct, and that's sort of that lower dimension. And then we have reasoning as the higher dimension.
I feel all the more smarter for that conversation.
Hold on, let me go get my whiteboard and I'll write it all out. Let me click the dots. No, that's cool. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, I would love to know, listeners, if you have seen the movie Flatland. It's very, very good. There's also a Flatland Squared, Flatland 2, but it's squared. You know, it's cute. Okay, so I also love this episode for another reason. And I want to sort of tie it in with Wonder Woman because I just saw that movie. So Troy goes through her loss and going through those stages of denial and anger, and, you know, because she has lost something that I think she relies on. And she goes through this process where she doesn't have it. And so she's questioning her ability as a counselor and who she is as a person. And we can see throughout the episode that she learns that her being Betazoid and having this empathic ability is not who she is, and that she really is, because of her training, her knowledge, her inner strength, can still be a good counselor and not have it based on this one ability that she has. And what I saw with that, and why I wanted to relate it to Wonder Woman, is that when they talk about the God Slayer, sorry if there's anyone who hasn't seen Wonder Woman yet,
and who hasn't seen that movie? I
know. I'm sure everyone on the Babel Conference has, or anyone listening. But when Diana thinks that the God Slayer is the sword, right? And she puts her belief and faith in this sword. And then when it gets destroyed, and she's like, oh my gosh, I thought this was her ability, you know, and just like Troy thought her having her empathic ability was who she was. No, you find your inner strength. And we see that in Wonder Woman with Diana, where she realizes, oh, I'm the God Slayer. It's not based on something external, that it comes from within. I just think is a very strong and powerful message for us all. And so that's why I like The Loss.
Haven't seen it in so long. That's another episode you've convinced me it's very much unsung, because hey, I can't remember the last time I watched it, so I can't really comment properly.
Yeah, when I was browsing through the episodes, the only thing I remembered about this episode was this is the episode where, you know, Troy loses all her abilities and goes through a state of panic and just tells me that she failed counseling school. She should be leaning on all that stuff. But like, it definitely shows that how dependent she was on the empathetic her empathic abilities and how much she leaned on it. And yeah, that could definitely be something that could be learned from. To have that ability suppressed and you have to rely on everything. I mean, it definitely it would be good training to adapt. I wouldn't doubt it if something like that. I don't know if they could do it, suppress your abilities for like training or whatever or whatnot. But that's all I remember. But I don't remember the math part and all that. I'll have to go back and look because I really didn't. I haven't seen this in a very long time. That's all I remember was the whole her missing her empathic powers.
Yes. Well, then my job here is done. Definitely go watch The Loss again.
Miss Amy said so. With her ruler.
And, if you can, yes, watch Flatland too, because it's really good. It's just real short. I can put the link on the show notes that will get you to it. So,
and today's homework is
there's your homework, everyone. All right, Richard, give us a third episode on your list.
Okay, so I love this episode for its comedy because I could see this being played on Earth. It's First Contact. I love this episode. It's everything a reconnaissance mission goes wrong. When it goes, everything goes wrong. And Frakes's acting is perfect on this. He's like, the scientist is asking, what is her name? I don't know. Jakara? Jakara? Oh, I'm sorry. It's questioned by Dr. Burrell. Oh. There you go. Oh. Dr. Burrell. So when, Riker's being questioned by Dr. Burrell and it's just it's funny on how on the information that he gives her, and just the reactions are classic. I love it.
Remind our listeners what this episode is about.
Okay, so this is the episode where Commander Riker gets injured during a reconnaissance missions, and basically he gets probed and they find out that he's not actually of the same species as they are, and this is
first
contact world, and this would be technically the first contact for this culture, and that's right, pre-warp, there you go, pre-warp civilization, there you go. And he got injured, and now there are all these questions and conspiracy theorists and doctors are trying to figure out what's going on, and he's trying to get out, obviously, and get back to the ship and whatnot. But like, he can't go anywhere because he's trapped, and it just sucks. Like I said, everything a reconnaissance mission happens, it goes wrong. So, one of those. I could totally see that happening here on Earth. That someone finds an alien for some reason that looks like us, but not the internal plumbing, and all kinds of conspiracy things going on. What?
Well, I've got Area 51 just north of me, north of Las Vegas. So we definitely see, I definitely see a lot of that conspiracy. But no, I enjoy this episode as well. I like the interplay between science versus not accepting science, I guess you would mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. And that really plays out quite well within this episode, and very important in our days right now.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, like one of the first Star Trek action figure I had was my parents bought me a Dr. Soong. So not the most exciting of Star Trek toys, as you can imagine. And then one of the next toys I got was actually a Riker action figure from this episode. So I had a Dr. Soong and a Riker in his little blue bathrobe with his bumpy forehead. Not the most exciting toys to play with when you're you're making your adventures on the bridge.
No, it just reminds me of all the stuff that I went down to Roswell and oh wow, that place is wow.
Yeah, I mean, very much so.
You talk about, like, I mean, they say, I mean, I heard lots of rumors before I went there that basically the only thing that's the only reason why Roswell exists still is for the alien tourist. And wow, yeah, they sell it.
Oh yeah, like I went on an Area 51 tour when I was in Las Vegas, because I thought I was one of those things I always wanted to do. Like I would always find the alien stuff quite funny and quirky, and I thought, oh, like it would be so good to go on this tour, be like filled with like these true believer aliens, and we'll spend this like journey as we go to the little alien and all these sorts of things, talking about alien conspiracies. And I was like in the car, I was like, so you guys, like, do you believe in aliens? And it's kind of like, yeah, I guess so, yeah. And I was like, oh man, it's gonna be like the most boring 12 hours in the world. Like no one was wanting to debate the thing. So it was a long day from Vegas to Area 51 and back again, that's for sure. But the burger at the Little Alien was quite good.
Well, they definitely chalk it up. There's a museum, and they have a 5K fun run that starts at midnight, and you dress up in aliens and go for your little run and stuff. So I have yet to do it, but I have thought about it. But yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Talking to the people in the diners are really, wow. Very interesting people, very interesting stories, and they sell it. They really do. I give it to them. They need to do acting jobs or something like that, because they're really good at it. Whether or not it's true or not, I don't know, but you know, it doesn't seem like it, but whatever. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right, Lee, give us your third.
My final one is going to be Reunion. It's not an unsung episode in a way, but I think there's a lot that can be somewhat unsung about it that I'm going to focus on. Behind the scenes, it's the first appearance of Brannon Braga behind the scenes as a writer on Star Trek The Next Generation. So something to be applauded, someone that would go on to be completely instrumental in the creation of Voyager, Enterprise, would write Generations and First Contact. And this is his like first episode, and obviously joining with her, you know, a kind of formalized writing partner of Ronald D. Moore. I think this episode, it's a brilliant episode, but it's unsung for truly that respect, that it's always good when you kind of look and think of kind of his career, that he would be go on to be classed as the mad science guy, the time travel guy. Like, this episode is just like the kind of brilliant writing that kind of The Next Generation was really kicking out at that point. It had gone from those kind of ropey first two seasons, and then with kind of Ronald D. Moore coming on, then Brannon Braga, Mike Piller, like to get someone like that. And I think a lot of fans sort of look back on Brannon Braga and I think are often too critical of him. Like, don't get me wrong, like, he did make mistakes on Voyager and Enterprise, but I think he's a brilliant ambassador for Star Trek, and I think when you watch him on especially the Enterprise Blu-rays, the documentaries, I mean, the guy just beats himself up. He really kind of goes, well, we had this idea, you know. And he's very self-critical. And I think that people can forget when they're kind of... It's easy to tweet him going, that episode was crap, or Threshold was rubbish. What are you thinking? Threshold is brilliant, I must remind people. But Brannon Braga is a true great ambassador for Star Trek. And he's created so many amazing episodes. And this was his first start there. And it truly went on to be something of quite a long career that he's had with Star Trek. And it's good to see things are going so well for him outside of Star Trek as well just now. So, yeah. Yeah, we're lucky to have him in one episode to kickstart his Star Trek career. So yeah, it may not be an unsung episode, but he's an unsung hero, I think, for his work. And I think that episode kind of plays an important role in kickstarting that career.
See, now this was going to be my second choice.
I thought you would put this on.
So I was like, no. I'll make this my honorable mention. Because I had a feeling either you or Amy was going to do it. But like, yeah, I actually love this episode. You know, obviously another child actor again. Well, he really doesn't get much screen time for this. But like, yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite episodes. I mean, we get to see, the Worf with a family and attempted of a family, and it's you know, continuation of what is that episode, what was the one that with Kay Largan, the previous one,
Emissary,
that's right. So obviously continuation of Emissary, and it's one of my favorites of the seasons. It really is. Besides Redemption.
Yeah. Well, I know why Lee chose it, because we know that you, Lee, enjoy Ambassador Kalar.
Yeah.
Susie Plaxen. So, of course, I was also going to pick this one, too, because I love the whole drama with the Klingons and Kempek, and we get Gowron and Doras, you know, I mean, just so good. It's a great episode as well.
I think one day we'll have to do an episode on this little arc from Emissary to Sins of a Father, you know, kind of the, as I've mentioned before, Klingon politics is brilliant. That it's been like a couple months now and I still haven't got this Star Trek Klingon CNN version kicking about, so hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I was actually thinking the same thing, and it's like, yeah, we need to do this whole Klingon arc with Worf, so... Excellent. Great minds. All right. Well, my third and final pick. Is it my turn? I forget.
Yeah.
Okay. This one, again, I don't know that it gets a lot of love, and so I chose it for that reason, is The Nth Degree. So The Nth Degree, where Barclay gets this power from the Slytherins?
Slytherin.
Something like that. And I think we see why I chose this episode. Oh, so anyways, let me finish with the synopsis. So then he hooks himself up to the computer because the people around him are being so slow, and he can just fix the array by himself. And when he does, he shoots the ship into the center of the Milky Way, and there we find the intelligent aliens there. And then his power is taken away and the ship is returned. So that's The Nth Degree. And so why I like this episode is because I think we get to see, and we see it in a couple episodes, you know, throughout Next Gen and throughout Star Trek, just this philosophy of what is the real potential of the human brain? Like, what if all those little synapses were connected? Could we become this intelligent and, you know, working faster than a computer and stuff like that? So that is why. And it's a great Barclay episode.
Yeah, I do love Barclay. He is pretty much the atypical Star Trek fan, and that's not an insult or whatsoever, but I think we can relate probably more to him than probably these super intelligent, you know, superhuman characters that are littered throughout Star Trek. He's one of us, and sometimes that can maybe be a bit uncomfortable, but I think he is the best representation of your typical Star Trek fan.
Exactly. Yes, I agree.
I vaguely remember this episode. Yeah. I don't have much feedback on this one because I don't remember it really. I mean, I know I've probably seen it. Actually, I'm looking through it and I'm like, it doesn't click.
Well, Barclay gets this like God complex, you know, and sort of turns out being mean to some people. You just don't know. And I know more than you, and I'm going to take control of the ship and I work faster than you. And so we get to see how power corrupts absolutely, or what's that saying?
Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Corrupts
absolutely, yes. So I think we can see that. But again, I like that idea, that philosophy that, you know, what can the brain do if stimulated and connected, you know? I like it.
Sounds like Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
And also the episode, The Nth Degree, I mean, is mathematical in and of itself. So we have to love it for that.
Yeah, I was expecting you to give us a math lesson on this, but I guess they're... Oh, I remember this now. Okay, I remember this now. Yeah. Oh, man, it's been a very long time since I've seen this one. Wow. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You know, you've been now inspired to watch that when you're kicking about.
Huh. Yes.
Interesting. Huh. All right, well, I will definitely watch this one again, because I feel, I don't know, There's some of these episodes I have just that's one of the that's actually one of the very few episodes that I remember, but now I remember it now, so yeah.
Well, I am very excited we did not double up
makes
on any of them.
One of my honorable mentions was used, yes. But that's as far as it goes.
All right, well, Lee, tell us your other honorable mention then.
Just simply Cupid for one reason, and everyone loves Cupid. It isn't an
really?
Unsung episode.
I don't love Cupid.
Well, the reason I picked Cupid is it's the first episode of Star Trek at this point that is set in the jolly old United Kingdom. So good to see some representation of the homeland there.
Yes, very good, very good. Yep, that in my opinion is I don't know. I just, it's too silly for me, I guess.
What
I don't
you're
know.
Trying to say is, I protest I'm not a Mary Earl Grey team member.
I protest.
She's not a Mary Men.
Oh, and then everyone, you know, the Troy outfit and, you know, it all. It's weird.
Well, you don't like Vash?
Yeah, not a fan of Vash either.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I like the Q play of it, and you know, it's they come together and rescue, and so it's a fine.
Some of
episode.
The greatest quotes of Star Trek comes out. I'm not a merry man.
When he just smashes the mandolin as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Ah, better.
The arrow and oh, it's a classic.
All right, Richard, give us one of your honorable mentions.
Devil's Due.
Oh, yes.
I was going to choose this one, but I was like, you know, there's so many more episodes that are better than this one. Well, it's not really better. Just, I mean, yeah, plays with, you know, what do we consider as, you know, the devil, God, whatever, and, you know, treating your beliefs and everything. But, like, yeah, it's a really good episode to... you know, definitely just to have fun with. I mean, it just kind of just like, you know, what if God or what if the devil was, you know, imaginary and just happens to be a being or something like that or whatnot, or who actually built the pyramids? I mean, come on, you know, sort of thing. And yeah, it's just. It's a fun. I think it's a fun episode, but it you know, at the same time, it's also, you know, it's very playful to mess around with those ideas. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Devil's Due. It's great. It's super fun. And
and not to mention the costume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did talk about it before. That's right.
Yeah. Well, one of my honorable mentions is Half a Life. And this is the one with Luoxana Troi. And she falls in love with Timison, who is a scientist who's trying to save his world from a star explosion, I believe. But that's not the main point. The main point is that they have this thing called resolution. And this is voluntary euthanasia for those who are getting old. And how old is too old? A mere young 60. And I just think that, and I watched MASH all the time. So Timison, who is, what's his name? Help me out.
David, oh.
None of us watched probably MASH, I don't know.
What?
He's in Dead Zone. That's all.
Oh,
there we
go. Oh, I don't
Michael
know.
I watched a few episodes of MASH, not many.
Charles Winthrop III or something like that. Anyway, oh my gosh, he was fabulous. So, and he hasn't aged at all. Because when I think about when MASH was on and now here we are, you know, with Next Gen, he just looks amazing still. And, so I like that interplay of like how old is too old, and it's in theory a good idea. I mean, who wants to burden the young generation with all these aging and old people, you know? So, I mean, it's a weird and interesting concept to think about. But the dynamic interplay that Luoxana and Timison have is just amazing. I think that's what makes the episode and their relationship. And it's really, really a great, great episode. And One other tidbit is that Timison's daughter, Dara, happens to be the first time we see Michelle Forbes, who we talked about with Ensign Roe. So we get to see her as an actor being introduced to Next Gen in season 4 before she picks up her role as Ensign Roe. So you guys remember Half a Life?
I do, yeah. It's a very sweet and tender episode. I know some people think, look, Xana Troi episodes are automatically a write-off, but sometimes you get episodes like this and Forsaken, which really kind of hit the spot, and I think this is a lovely episode. It's certainly one that hopefully I don't get to that age and start to feel redundant.
Yeah, this reminds me, every time I watch this episode, or at least hear about it or whatnot, I always think of Emanations from Voyager. Because it's basically the same thing. If you're elderly, you know, disabled or whatever, they basically kill you, which means you're transported to basically a planet where your body basically deteriorates. So, but it's a Voyager episode. It's a really good episode. Definitely the same idea. It's like, it unburdens the youth without caring for the old. Which is a terrifying idea. I don't know. My dad's getting to that age where, yeah, it's gonna get to the point where I'm gonna have to start taking care of him. But like, I couldn't even imagine something like that when I get older.
So, Richard, are you saying you need to enact resolution now?
No, I need to have more. I need to have more children so they can take care of me. At least Jennifer's brother and sister—they have 4 kids each, plenty of children to take care of one person.
The patrons of Trek FM will look after you, Richard.
Yeah, yeah. Beats being stuck at a nursing home.
Ugh. Any other episodes on your list that you wanted to highlight?
There's so many sung episodes of season 4 that it really was a struggle to find the unsung ones. So no, I'm all good.
Yeah, I don't have any more. I mean, Reunion was really the only one left, and we've already talked about it. So I mean, there are a lot of good episodes in this one that everyone should be watching.
Yes. Period. Yeah. And I think it's been interesting to see the transition of, you know, when we started this, like season 1, season 2, it's like there were so many episodes that you see people complain about or don't like. And so then it's easy to find those unsung episodes. But then coming to the seasons where they're so good that every episode is memorable and you can see that it is becoming a little bit more challenging for us. So I look forward to when we talk about season 5, because that's, we've got Next Gen firing on all cylinders going by then. So,
I actually just heard the and this is not in the Babel conference, but I was listening, or I'm not, why do I say listen? It's not listen, read. So I read a very interesting analysis of TNG, and they hated every episode started from season 3 on. And I'm like, wait a second here. It's like, you really like season 1 and 2? I mean, that's
like a clickbait article, doesn't it?
No, it was a comment, actually. It was someone commenting. And I'm like, what? That's crazy talk. But yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited for season 5.
Well, it has been fun talking about season 4 today. But it's not the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
When Lieutenant Saru says, "I sense the coming of death," they could be playing staying alive in the background.
They're like, whatever, man. BG Sam, staying alive.
We're staying alive. Aren't you listening to the sound system on this bridge?
Man, your bell bottoms too tight, boy.
That would be awesome if they had bell bottoms on the Discovery uniforms.
Meta Treks.
Garrick really personifies that snake-like way of kind of slithering around in the shadows, more subtle than any other character in the Star Trek universe.
Plain, simple Garrick would be the first to say that the clothes make the Cardassian.
Primitive culture. A look at history and culture through Star Trek.
This episode was actually banned by the BBC for many years. And they always said, I don't know if this is true, not so much because of the kind of allegorical significance of the episode, but because of this single line in it where Data says, he basically says, oh, well, you know, the IRA basically achieved what they wanted in, I think, 2024.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming up.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's shows, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best places to join the larger conversation is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. We love interacting with our listeners there, so join the conversation. If you'd like to send us an email, we love those too. You can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. If you'd like to help keep all the shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all that details at patreon.com/trekfm. So, Richard, where can people talk to you about season 4?
They can find me on the Babel Conference. It's where I don't. No, I'm just kidding. They can find me on the Babel Conference. I do pop in there here and there, you know, obviously, you know, posting my pictures of my barbecue and whatnot. And same thing with my Father's Day fishing trip, which is going to be freaking awesome. I'm excited. You can find me there, and you can also find me on Twitter at xransom, and that's my handle.
Great. Lee, tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Lee_Nostromo at Star Trek VHS, and you can find me on the Babel Conference here and there, and you can find me on my other podcast, Filibuster, talking about nerd and geek culture.
Yes. And I also am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. But my favorite place is hanging out at the Babel Conference. And so you can find me there as well. All right. Well, this has been fabulous. Again, I am so happy that we all three are united once again. So join us next week for another cup of Earl Grey.
Today is a good day to die.
I must protest, I'm not a merry man.
Great joy and gratitude.